I'm definitely appreciative of the opportunity that I have to get up here and talk about the subject of anxiety. So if you would like to, go ahead and turn to Matthew 6:25. Matthew chapter 6:25. The rest of the verses this morning are going to be, we'll kind of go through them pretty fast. So if you want to write them down, I'll have all the verses up here for you. But if you'd like to write them down, that might be good, because we'll be going through them pretty quickly. So Matthew chapter 6:25, it says, "For this reason I say to you, do not be worried about your life as to what you will eat or what you will drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing?" And I chose this picture because it's a famous picture. It was one that was taken in 1936. It's a picture that depicts the Great Depression, which was a time in our not-so-distant history where a lot of people in our country, didn't know when their next meal was going to be, and they were worried about some of these more essential things that we don't worry so much about in modern society. But there's people all throughout the world that their next meal and what they wear and these things are legitimate concerns to them, and it's something to remember that Matthew 6 tells us even these things that are necessary for our lives, we shouldn't be worried about. And often we get worried about the little things. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at that, and we're going to see, what causes us to worry and what causes us to make these smaller things bigger in our minds, and then why that's important. Philippians 4 verse 6 says, "Be anxious for nothing." It's pretty simple. Thought about ending my lesson just right now. Because, what's the cure to anxiety? Well, don't be anxious. Pretty simple. But and we'll look a little bit at what else that verse has to say later on. So National Institute of Mental Health describes anxiety, and I think it's important to describe it because it's a normal reaction to stress. Anxiety is something that's normal. It's something that we need. It's beneficial to us. The problem is when it becomes excessive. When it becomes excessive, it starts to negatively impact our day-to-day living, and that's when it can start leaking into our spiritual life, which of course is our concern. This is called the Yerkes-Dodson curve. It's in psychology, and it's basically just a graphical representation of the exact thing I just said. The fact that if we don't have enough stress, we'll be bored or unengaged, or we won't be focused or energized, whereas when we have this optimal amount of stress, our performance is, at its peak. And then once we get too stressed out, we start getting the fatigue, exhaustion, we have health problems, breakdown and burnout. And of course, for us, the concern this morning is when this starts to leak into our spiritual lives and some of these feelings become kind of invasive thoughts that have a detrimental effect on our spiritual life. It's important, that the level of stress that we have. Anxiety is inherently not bad. When it says to be anxious for nothing, it's not saying, not to ever be anxious, but to not have this overly built-up anxiety about things we shouldn't be anxious for. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. I added this slide because I think it's important to note, things like PTSD, or I highlighted some that are a little bit more common, social anxieties. These are becoming more prevalent, especially some of these disorders, because we're a society that uses our brain more than our brawn. A lot of us sit at a desk all day and, we think problems through. We use our minds. And this is one of the consequences of this, is that we're seeing a lot higher prevalence of some of these anxiety disorders. And this really is something I just wanted to make mention of. It's not necessarily who this lesson's for, but just because it is so prevalent. In fact, 30% of individuals in the United States have anxiety at some point in their life, and 4.1. in a 12-month period, experience what's considered to be a severe anxiety disorder. And another reason I mentioned this is a really personal subject for me, because about 5 years ago, I started having panic attacks for no reason, and it was something that I still don't know why it happened. There were days I had 10 panic attacks a day, no reason why, and it really opened my eyes to kind of this thing, and that's why anxiety's a topic that I really feel is something to share. But for our purposes this morning, I want to think of anxiety as just we're going to use it in its most general sense as something that is if the way we handle stress is getting in the way of who we need to be or who we want to be, that's kind of who I'm targeting with this lesson. And that's if whether it's depression or anxiety or any other way that we are not handling stress properly, that's who this is for. So here's kind of the general outline. We're going to talk about the causes of stress, and we're going to look at some characters in the Bible, and we're going to see what made them stressed out. We're going to look at the signs and symptoms. What's the problem? Why is too much stress a bad thing? Well, we'll see what some of the symptoms are and why what it looks like, and then we'll talk about what I call the cycle, and it's just kind of a simplified just a series of events that cause things that shouldn't make us anxious to really work us up and make us anxious, and a lot of times that's difficult to reverse. And then we'll spend most of our time talking about what we're supposed to do about this and talking about the treatment of it. So for general causes, first person I want to look at is Job. In Job chapter 7, verse 20, we see that Job, a picture into, kind of what he was going through. Of course, he had everything taken away from him. He had physical pain. He had, emotional pain. He had all that. But the thing that bothered him was he didn't know why this was being done. And in starting verse 20, it says, "Have I sinned? What have I done to you, O watcher of men? Why have you set me as your target so that I am a burden to myself? Why then do you not pardon my transgression and take away my iniquity?" So, he feels that he's a burden to himself. He feels this anxiety, this stress, because of, not knowing or understanding what the bigger picture was and what was going on. Another example we see is in Genesis chapter 32, verse 6, we read about Jacob and Esau. Of course, Jacob and Esau were brothers, and they didn't leave on the best of terms. Jacob stole Esau's birthright, and when Jacob later on heard that his brother Esau was coming and that there are 400 men with him, he didn't expect that to be too pleasant of a reunion. He thought that was something that it says, then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And so Jacob was someone who experienced anxiety. Elijah is a great example. It says that in 1 Kings 19, earlier in verses 1 through 2, it talks about how he's being pursued by Jezebel. And this was something that that made him scared. In 1 Kings 19, in starting verse 3, it says, "And he was afraid and rose up and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree and requested for himself that he might die. It is enough now." And he said, "It is enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I am not better than my father's." So here we have the great prophet Elijah, and we can see that, he even had these moments of weakness where he was depressed and he wanted to die. He said, "O Lord, take my life, for I'm no better than my father's." So he definitely was no stranger to anxiousness or depression. He was very upset in that moment. David had a lot to be stressed about. There's a lot of turmoil in his life, beginning when he was pursued by King Saul. And we see later on, too, that, with his sin with Bathsheba. In Psalm, the one I chose was 31, and this isn't the only one. There are several different of the Psalms that really show the kind of David's commentary and his grief and his distress for, what he did. It says, "Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I'm in distress. My eye is wasted away from grief, my soul and my body also." And that's Psalm 31, verse 9. And continuing on there, we just see that David was no stranger to stress as well. Jeremiah was a prophet in the time where it was probably the worst time to be a prophet in Israel. The prophets before him, there was kind of a glimmer of hope that you know, that the people would repent. But by the time Jeremiah was came around, you know, they call him the weeping prophet, and everyone around him was persecuting him, and he was there to deliver a message that, you know, it was punishment time, and that they were kind of past the point of turning things around. And in Jeremiah 20, verse 18, a lot like Elijah, we have a great prophet who says, "Why did I ever come forth the womb to look upon trouble and sorrow, so that my days have been spent in shame?" So again, he was no stranger, and he didn't, you know, he, if you continue reading in Jeremiah 20, verse 18, which I'd encourage you to, he goes on to say, describe in great detail some of the anguish he was going through. And our ultimate example is Jesus. And again, we talked about anxiety. It says, be anxious for nothing. We talked about that being kind of this inappropriate response to anxiety. And because Jesus, you know, is an example of someone who was anxious. It wasn't wrong for him to be anxious. He had the anxiety was because he was facing such a great, great burden, and the fact that he was about to bear the sins of mankind, and he was also about to about to be executed. And it talks in Luke 22, verse 41, it talks about the Garden of Gethsemane. And later on it says, and he being in agony was praying very fervently, and his sweat became like drops of blood falling down upon the ground. And so these are some examples of people in the Bible who've been anxious, and we're going to go back and look and see what they did to be better. So what makes us anxious? So we see what made them anxious. What makes us anxious? Well, there's some big things, you know, our survival, if you have a life-threatening disease, or if there's something that, if you fear for your life, that can definitely be a stress. Certain future, losing control is a big one, you know, whether it's of external things, of the situations around you, or if you're losing control of the way that you handle your anxiety, both those things can cause anxiety. An unhealthy family environment, well-being of others. A big one is our spiritual well-being. Our spiritual well-being can be a source of anxiety if we're not living right. And that's probably a good thing, because, that's our kind of our conscience telling us that we need to make things right. But also to mention that there's little things, too, that can make us anxious. The political climate, you know, during especially now with it being election season, there's a lot of stress going around there. You know, there's a lot of stress going around now that we, you know, have a president elected, and that can cause anxiety for the future of our country, for some people, and our finances, things for younger people, you know, exams or social pressures. These can cause anxiety too. And the point I really want to make here is that if you don't handle these things correctly, they can be built up to the point where your body is, you know, reacting to these, what we would consider little things, as if they were, you know, a bigger problem. And a lot of times people don't want to seek help if they're struggling with anxiety with these little things, because they seem so little to the individual versus, you know, someone else they might know that's going through something big and handling it well. It's important not to discount anxiety because it can be blown up so quickly if you don't handle it right. So what are the signs and symptoms? We talked about, you know, the general causes. What does it look like when we're anxious? Well, this is all just from literature. One I like there is, again, the finding it difficult to control the worry. So when you start stressing about the stress, that's what makes it start to kind of amplifies the anxiety we experience. And we'll talk about that, the cycle, here in a little bit. But there's restlessness, being easily fatigued, difficulty concentrating, irritability, etc. But again, what we're concerned about is some of the spiritual signs. And that's when we don't handle anxiety right, it starts to leak into our spiritual lives. Our outlook on life can be warped. We can have difficulty trusting. We can struggle with our faith. We pray less, and we doubt that God can work in our lives. And this is all due to something that we have not been properly taken care of, and that's the anxiety in our life. And the way that gets out of control, we'll talk about, is through this cycle. And so the cycle begins with stress. So we experience stress in our lives. Everyone experiences stress. As we talked about earlier, everyone experiences some sort of anxiety. Anxiety in its actual definition is a response to stress. And of course, we're using that generally this morning, is a general term this morning. But when we are when we have anxiety and are anxious, we often rely on ourselves. So we say, okay, what can I do to fix this? And typically, sometimes that works, but most of the times it's not. We're not very good at handling anxiety a lot of the time. We don't do well with that. And so that just leads to more stress. And so you can see the cycle begins over. And then you start stressing about the stress. And that's when the small things we stress out can build into huge stressors in our lives and can take over. And so what do we do about it? So that's great. We can see kind of how it manifests itself in us and why it's a problem. So what do we do about it? Well, let's go back and let's look at some of the examples that we went through. Job. So we talked about Job. He had a problem because he didn't know why he was suffering. In Job 19 in verse 23 through 29, right in there he says, "As for me, I know that my Redeemer lives, and at last he will take his stand on the earth. Even if after my skin is destroyed, yet from my flesh I shall see God, whom I myself shall behold, and whom my eyes will see and not another. My heart faints within me if you say, how shall we persecute him? And what pretext for a case against him can we find? Then be afraid of the sword for yourselves, for wrath brings the punishment of the sword, so that you may know that there is judgment." So even though Job didn't handle his situation the best, and not knowing that why he was experiencing what he was, he did find comfort in knowing that his Redeemer lived, and that God was ultimately his judgment was final, and that his judgment, was that we should trust in his judgment, and he describes that in that chapter. Jacob, what did he do? Immediately after he gets word that Esau's coming, he goes to God in prayer and he says, "Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I fear him that he will come and attack me and the mothers of my children. For you said, I will surely prosper you and make your descendants as great as the sand of the sea, which is too great to be numbered." So he's saying, it's real simple. He had a problem. He said a prayer and asked for deliverance from that problem. And often that's what we need to do. And then, of course, it's in Genesis 32 in verse 11. But in another point I like is that he kind of recounts the promise that was given, that through him, they would have a great nation. I don't think he's saying, deliver me because, you promised. More so he's saying, deliver me, and I have confidence that you will because you have promised these things. So Jacob, what helped him, what made Jacob better was a prayer for deliverance. Elijah, we talked about Elijah. He didn't want to be alive anymore. He was that depressed and that upset, the great prophet Elijah. And it says in 1 Kings 19, verse 5, he lay down and slept under a juniper tree, and behold, there was an angel touching him. And he said to him, "Arise, eat." And he looked, and behold, there was a head of bread cake baked on stones, on hot stones, and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. So Elijah, an angel came and gave him food and water. He just needed food, water, and sleep. And I love this story because it shows that, we got to take care of ourselves. If we're distressed, if we're depressed, if we're anxious, we can't, we have a tendency to not want to eat, to not want to sleep, and that often contributes to the problem. And here we see that, Elijah, for him, he needed to get something to eat, get something to drink and sleep. And after that was over, he went on that strength and continued going about doing the work of the Lord, even after we see how how much he was struggling after being pursued by Jezebel. David, we talked about Psalm 31 just being verse 9 being one example of some of the distress he felt. But what was he doing when he was describing this? He was describing this to God. He was communicating with God and having a conversation with him. And I think that's one of the great things about David that made him a man after God's own heart, was that he was able to have an open dialogue with God and describe to him and kind of vent to God about, what was bothering him about his grief and the things he was going through. Jeremiah, we talked about Jeremiah. He was a prophet in a very bad time. There was, you know, the people of Israel were not Jeremiah fans. And he said in Jeremiah 20, verse 11, "But the Lord is with me like a dread champion. Therefore, my persecutors will stumble and not prevail. They'll be utterly ashamed because they have failed with an everlasting disgrace that will not be forgotten." So for Jeremiah, what helped him get over the anxiety in his life was to have confidence in the strength which God provided. And for Jesus, the whole reason he was in the Garden of Gethsemane was because he was praying. And yes, he was anxious, but he was praying, and in that the most anxious of times he had, that's how he chose to spend his time, and that's how he chose to handle. In Luke 22 and 41-44, you can see up there later, it says he was praying very fervently. His sweat became like drops of blood falling down upon the ground. So we see how each of these characters handled their stress, and it kind of breaks down to simply breaking the cycle. And so what we do is we don't rely on ourselves anymore, but we rely on God. And essentially, that's all that they were doing, is relying on God, which is going to result in contentment, which as a result of contentment, we have less stress and we have less anxiety. And so it's the exact opposite of what we were doing before. Instead of the cycle causing the anxiety to get worse and worse, it ends up making the problem less and less. And so this is a very, very basic concept. It's funny because, you know, it's a very similar thing they tell you to do in the field of psychology. You know, if you have a problem with anxiety, that's how they say to handle it, is you need to, not dwell on the things that are anxious. You kind of push all the anxiety aside. But, you know, the Bible does you one better, and you push it aside, but you give it to God, and the anxiety is taken care of. And some examples that, further kind of build on this point is Philippians 4, verse 6 says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known before God." So we said at the beginning, we said, be anxious for nothing. But why are we anxious for nothing? Because all those anxieties, we have an open door with God that he wants us to make his request known to him. 1 Peter 5, verse 6 through 7, "Humble yourselves before God." Again, you know, you have to have the humility to say, I can't do this myself. And that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting your anxieties on him because he cares for you. So we're not doing it ourselves. We're giving it to God and letting God take care of it. And that's the invitation that he has for us, because he wants to do that and he cares for us. Again, Proverbs 3, verse 5 through 6, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart." So we're giving it to God. Lean not on your own understanding. We're not doing it ourselves. We're not relying on ourselves to handle the anxieties. We're giving it to God. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Matthew 11, verse 28 through 30. "Come to me, all you who are weary and are heavy laden, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And I love this chapter. I always picture, you know, like being at the grocery store and you have like two bags of like dog food or something on your shoulders, and someone, you know, comes up and they have like, I don't know, like a bag of with like a couple peacock feathers in it or something, and they say, you know, I'll trade you. You know, I'll take that dog food. I'll carry that for you. You just have to carry this. You know, my load here's light. My burden's light. And that's what Jesus says to us. And, you know, especially when we talk about anxieties, that, you know, the anxiety of our sins is a problem that we have to take care of. And this is how Jesus takes care of it, is he takes it for us when we're buried in him. He takes the burden from us, and in turn, we bear his burden, which is so much lighter. Colossians 3, verse 15, "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, which you were called in one body to, and be thankful." So again, it's letting this peace of Christ that we have a special peace as Christians, because, you know, our sins have been forgiven, and this provides a peace, an ultimate peace that kind of makes all the anxieties of the world seem like nothing. "Cast your burden upon the Lord. He will sustain you. He'll never allow the righteous to be shaken." Psalm 55, verse 22. If Psalm 56 and verse 3, "When I'm afraid, I put my trust in you." Very simple verse, but I love it. You know, when we're anxious, we put our trust in God. It's very simple. We don't try to do it ourselves. Just kind of some last things here to remember is this isn't something that happens overnight. If you've been struggling with anxiety, if you've been struggling with, you know, letting your kind of emotions or feelings, you know, rule the way you think, it may not change overnight. You know, it takes time. That we talked about the process slowing down the cycle. It doesn't stop the cycle immediately. It slows it down. It helps. And you just have to consistently do the right thing and know to get it better. Anxiety for you, if it's, you know, especially if it's something that doesn't, you know, affect your spiritual life, if it's just something that you is kind of an annoyance, or you need to remember that it's 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7, that, you know, for Paul, he had a thorn in his flesh, and he prayed three times for it to be removed, but it wasn't. You know, and that could be anxiety for us. You know, if you have an anxiety disorder, if it's something you struggle with, or if you struggle with being depressed, but, you know, the thing is, you don't want to let it affect your spiritual life. And we need to remember that, you know, that all things work together. Romans 8, verse 28, you know, for those who love the Lord and, you know, are called according to his purpose, that all things work together for good, and that these trials serve a purpose. So, you know, if your anxiety doesn't go away, you know, the key is we don't want to let it affect our spiritual life. But it may be a necessity for us, as it was. If you'd like to, go ahead and take your songbooks out, and you can turn to the Song of Invitation, and then I'll just go ahead and share just an invitation for, you know, those who are maybe have been struggling with anxiety. We want to help as a church. You know, we want to pray for you. If it's something that you feel like you can't bear, then we would love to, you know, we'd love for you to come forward, and we'd love to say a prayer for you. If you have fallen away from Christ, if you've been obedient to Christ but fallen away, and that's been anxiety in your life, you know, then that's something you should take care of, and we can help you with that, and you can come forward and, you know, confess maybe some of the things you've done, or, you know, where we can pray for you. But if you aren't a Christian, unfortunately, you're still carrying that load. You're still carrying that load of sin, and Jesus invites you. He wants to take it. His yoke is easy, his burden is light. He wants to trade you, but you have to let him, and you have to be buried with him in baptism in order to take that. And he doesn't want you to be anxious, and neither do we. So if you have any need, please come forward now as we stand and sing.